Oh, there he is.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just we use shush to be able to mute ourselves when we're not speaking, and I've just inverted the setting right now to be like a push to silence instead of push to talk. So I was just speaking for nothing while holding the.
I have done that so many times since installing that tool. This is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show. This episode of Fragmented is brought to you by Hired.com. I don't know about you, but looking for a job kind of stinks. It's never really a good time. But Hired.com kind of makes that process a little bit easier and a little more rewarding. If you go to Hired.com/Fragmented, they'll actually pay you a $2,000 bonus if you land a job through Hired.com. That's double their normal bonus of $1,000. So a couple cool things about them. They actually will provide you the salary information up front to all of the positions. You can select the type of job that you're interested in applying for. So maybe it's a cool, scrappy startup. Or if you're really into those big corporate corporations, you can check out a nice, big, cushy corporate job as well. You get to decide. It's up to you. The salary information is presented to you up front so you can make sure that you're not wasting time with an interview that ends up being for no because you don't like the salary. There's also a whole bunch of other great things, such as you can apply for jobs in engineering, marketing, design, you name it, they got it. Again, if you're interested in finding a new job, be sure to check out Hired.com. That's go to Hired.com/fragmented to lock in that $2,000 bonus. Thanks again, Hired.
So Kaushik, is there a tool that you use every day, like in your job, that you can't live without?
IntelliJ, man. IntelliJ is the way to go. IntelliJ and all variants of IntelliJ, I suppose. So Android Studio, Ruby Mine, and all of the variants that come with it.
I agree. I recently bought the Toolbox edition, so I have access to all of them. It's like a free for all, like a kid in a candy store almost.
Oh wow, that's pretty cool. We'll add a link to that. That would be nice actually. So whenever you dive into some new language, like you can just pull out the IDE for that, and then like you're back home.
Yeah, totally. So I use of course Android Studio, but I also use RubyMine, PyCharm, WebStorm, IntelliJ. And if I guess I ever got into iOS, that would be blasphemy. But if I did, I could use their IDE as well.
We shall not talk about that.
So anyway, do you have anyone who might be able to help us if we wanted to learn more about perhaps the IntelliJ platform or even Android Studio and how we could kind of master it?
Absolutely. Both of us are sort of IntelliJ junkies. And there's another person who we found out is also a junkie and someone who, in fact, has a whole slew of like super amazing tips and tricks. So we're going to be talking to him today on the show. So without further ado, let's welcome Felipe.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show, Philip. So now most people maybe have heard of you or maybe they haven't heard of you. It's kind of up in the air. You know, you never know these days. But for folks are probably quite familiar with a series, I guess, that you released, I think, back in August of 2014 through December. And it was basically the Android Studio tips of the day, and where you kind of showed all these different tips through these cool little GIFs and explained them all.
Oh, yeah.
It was super useful, super helpful. So if folks remember that, this is that, Philip. Now, for folks that don't know you, can you kind of give us maybe a little bit of background of who you are, maybe how you got into Android, what you currently do in Android, etc.?
Absolutely. So I got into Android about 5 or 6 years ago in the era of Cupcake. Actually, before that, I was doing a bit of iOS development, but very, very little iOS development. Never went very far with that. And very soon afterward, we decided to try to do some Android. We already had some Java background where we're working at, and it just seems like a very nice platform. It was open source. The SDK was great. At the time, I loved Eclipse. Eclipse was so awesome, and I loved that more than Xcode. So yeah, that's one of my dirty secrets. I've done a bit of iOS, and I actually liked Eclipse back in the days.
Wow, that's the first.
Absolutely. But afterwards, some of my colleagues that were doing more server-side Java just introduced me to Android, because at the time, there was also an Android plugin for IntelliJ. So
yeah.
At first, everything felt weird. in IntelliJ, you know, the keyboard shortcuts were not the same. And I was a heavy user of keyboard shortcuts. And I was kind of used to all the kinks of Eclipse. So I was always doing like clean refresh and whatnot, mm-hmm. but it was working for me. So like for about 2 weeks, I went to my colleague trying to tell them why IntelliJ was not good at all, because I couldn't do X and Y that I was used to do very quickly in Eclipse. And mm-hmm. but just after something like 2 weeks, everything clicked. Everything became simpler. Everything became easy to understand. Everything worked just as it should be working. And this is when I got hooked on IntelliJ. And it was not easy at first, because I was trying to push for this thing afterwards in other projects. And people will say, well, yeah, but the official IDE is Eclipse, so why would we be using IntelliJ? Yeah. It was always an uphill battle. And even at the time of IntelliJ, compilation was pretty slow, and they didn't even have predexing at the time. So we're not talking about multidexing, just predexing, just the act of taking jars and predexing them so that they are pre-compiled, so that you don't have to compile everything. Yep. And it was way back when we were using Juice and Guava and RoboJuice and all those big and heavyweight libraries. So like compile times would get to about 2 minutes for very simple projects. But the productivity gain when editing code and navigating through code was so great that it didn't even matter.
So now, Philip, you also have some other accolades in the Android community. You're a Google development expert in Android. You are also one of the DroidCon Montreal organizers. Is that correct for 2015?
Yes. So I've been a GDE for about a year. So it's a great program where for people that are doing good in the community. So basically writing blog posts and organizing conference and whatnot. And yes, in 2015, I was one of the co-organizers of DroidCon Montreal. I organized it with Marcos Paulos Damascenos, who had the original idea, because he went to DroidCon in New York the year before and felt like this was so great that we really needed to have it in Montreal also. And we also had Esther Chenard that was with us, that was taking care more of the operation side of things. So it was really a great conference. We had a fantastic roster that year. Jesse Wilson and Jake Wharton did the keynote. We had fantastic attendees and speakers. It was a great, great experience. And we really wanted to be able to do it again in 2016. But sadly, it got canceled because it ended up being the exact same dates as Google I.O.
Oh, well.
To be fair, we did verify if everything was fine before that. You took a look at the whole schedule for the Moscone Center for these dates, and everything was absolutely great. But then Google threw a curveball and did it in the Shoreline Amphitheater. Oh, well.
So last question for you. Where are you working now?
So right now I'm working for American Express as a remote employee. So people might have noticed like my weird accent and might wondering where I'm from. So I'm from the suburbs of Montreal in Quebec. So that's the French part of Canada. So I have a French-Canadian accent.
Very cool.
Excellent.
Very cool.
Awesome.
All right. So Phil, you, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you are a complete IntelliJ junkie, right? You tweak and you use your setup like to the max. So I was curious to know about everything about your Android Studio configuration and your environment, right? So let's start off like, what are your basics? Like, what do you feel are some of the basic configurations that sort of work well for you? Like, what font to use? What size is it? Like, do you use, like, the standard theme? I want to know everything about how you use Android Studio.
Sure. Okay. So, actually, I'm big on defaults. Usually, defaults are there for a reason. And I try to just roll with it, because every once in a while, I need to change environment, change laptop, or work on somebody else's machine. And I like to have something that it's a bit close to defaults. But then again, as developers, oftentimes we work pretty much on exactly the same machine. So we can tweak it a little bit. So I keep usually the Darkula team. I'm a big fan of the Dark team, although I've seen myself using the Light team every once in a while. For example, when you need something with a higher contrast. So if you are writing slides for a presentation and projectors are notorious for not handling very well dark backgrounds. Or if when you work from home and you want to go work outdoors and you have direct sunlight, actually having the Light team helps a lot to have a brighter screen. Yep. But otherwise, very big on the Dart team. For funds, I use the default one on OS X, which is Menlo. Although I've been trying to use Inconsolata for the past 3 or 4 days and liking it so far.
I know Don very early on also told me he's big on defaults, and like he tries to, yep. And that's true, right? Like you try to stick to yep. defaults. For the longest time, I used to be crazy and I used to like tweak every single thing. Like it was to the point where like, and that's why like I also had to have a mechanism of syncing it across different machines, because essentially what would happen is that like I would move to somebody else's like laptop and I was like, I don't understand what to do because none of my keyboard shortcuts work and I look like a complete dummy there. But I have found myself recently also moving more towards the defaults. And I guess at some point, because it just makes it easier to communicate with different people. So I found myself moving towards the defaults as well. So like slowly all my custom key map where I have almost every single shortcut defined in a different way, I've been trying to slowly drag myself back to the defaults there. So we had Hadi Hariri on the show from IntelliJ, right, from JetBrains. And he mentioned that he's big on not using tabs as such. Like, do you do any of those kind of like configurations? Like, what does it look like? If I was pair programming with you, what would your setup look like?
Yeah, so when I first heard that on the show, I decided to try it actually. And I ran without tabs for a couple of months and it was working fine. You can always do without them with some great shortcuts. For example, like Command E that will just show you the recent files. Or you can also just split a window and move very easily between your splits with, I think it's Alt Tab on OS X. Mm-hmm. It works really fine. At one point, I just upgraded my machine and just reinstalled it and went back to tabs and actually didn't mind seeing them at all. So I'm usually pretty good at cleaning up my tabs also. So I don't have like 100 tabs open at the same time, but I still kind of like to have like 2 or 3 files up there and just moving quickly through them with, I think it's Control key and left and right.
Left and right.
So
yeah.
I'm actually still using tabs.
You guys don't want to see my Chrome window.
Talking about Chrome, though, one nice thing when you do have tabs is that you can actually drag one of your tabs out of your IDE. So yep. if you have multiple monitors, you can actually take one of your files and just drag it to another monitor very easily.
Didn't IntelliJ have something like that? Wouldn't it like pop up? It wouldn't be like a whole full-fledged sort of editor. It wouldn't like duplicate the functionality in the editor, but it opens up just like a window pane or something, right?
Yeah, you can do that. Absolutely. Yeah, you can do that.
But it's interesting you mentioned about like the whole tabs and no tabs thing. One thing I like about the no tabs setup is that even if you split your screen pane and have like two windows side by side, at any point of time, it's almost like it maintains only like one tab on the stack. So it sort of auto cleans up. So each time, even if you open like multiple tabs, all those things like that are in the background, in the back stack, to use a terminology that we're all pretty familiar with, it's only the window at the top that survives. So like if you close that, then it actually just like closes everything. So I found that as a good way of auto cleaning my tabs, because unlike you, Phil, I'm not very good about cleaning my tabs. It just keeps like opening and like ballooning up.
Now, I think it's important to also let the listeners know that the tabs we're talking about are not, it's not the actual tab button on your keyboard. I know it may sound silly, but there may be some folks out there like, wow, what are they talking about? These are the tabs that are actually in Android Studio. When you open up multiple files on the top of the editor, you can select different files. So that is that's what we're talking about here. Okay, so let's kind of get into the real, I guess, meat and potatoes of it here. And I'm going to hop right into it with this question for you, Phil. What is your most used shortcut in Android Studio and why?
All right, most used shortcut. I think it'd probably be find actions. I don't know if it's the most, the one I use the most, but it's certainly the most useful one that everybody should know. This is kind of a game changer for everybody. So Command-Shift-A, or I think it's Control-Shift-A on Windows and Linux. This is basically a search in all of the actions that are possible inside of your IDE. So when I talk about action, I mean everything that you could map to a keyboard shortcut or not. So everything that's in your menu, every action that the IDE can perform. And why that's very important is that this is a great way to find, just using the keyboard, anything that you should be doing now. And it also provides you with the keyboard shortcut. So the next time you can try to do it a bit faster by just invoking the shortcut itself. So for example, if you're trying to do a refactoring for extract method, but you don't remember at all how it works, well, you can just do Command Shift A and start typing extract, and it would be in the top results. So you could only be doing this. Or if you want to install a plugin, well, you can just start typing plugin, and it will give you an option to just open the preferences directly into the plugin section. So it's really a quick way to navigate through your IDE without having to memorize hundreds of keyboard shortcuts. So,
in fact, recently I also had to use it for a shortcut that didn't have a keyboard shortcut, because that's like the advantage, right? Like with Find Actions, even if you don't have like a default keyboard shortcut associated with it, like it sort of pops it down. So I don't remember what it was. It was like Inspect APK or like one of the newer ones, which I didn't necessarily know the keyboard shortcut for. I use the thing that you mentioned, Find Action.
Are there any other shortcuts that you use on a daily basis that you would probably find in your most recently used list, if you had such a list?
Well, there is actually a list of your most recently used shortcuts that is available in the help menu.
Really?
So it's part of the productivity guide, which is a great way also to learn a new shortcut. So what it pretty much gives you is statistics about the keyboard shortcuts or the actions that you are using. So it will tell you how many times you've used code completion, which is always the one that's on top, usually. Like,
right. With,
depending on when's the last time you formatted your machine or switched from beta to Canary to the release of Android Studio. But you could get anywhere from like 5,000 or 20,000 or 100,000 code completion in there. This is just how much this thing comes up. So, of course, code completion is pretty much the one that that I use the most often. So a couple of type of code completion. I think the best one is the smart code completion. Like, you do Control Shift and Space, and what it does is when you are doing a completion for a variable name or variable assignment, or when filling parameters in a method, it will filter the list of code completion to only the types that are relevant there.
Oh.
So if something only takes a context and you do Command Shift and Space, what it's going to show you pretty much is like your current activity and not everything. And if you do it a second time because it didn't find anything, it's going to try to find chains of calls that could give you the proper the proper type. So, for example, it could be a static method that you could be importing, or just a method or something else. So, for example, it could be like fragment.getActivity that will provide you.
Oh, and this is different. So there are two variants of code completion. There's a basic code completion and there's like a smart one. So you're mentioning, so our listeners understand, Phil, what you're mentioning is like the smart code completion. So that's like different from the basic code completion.
Absolutely.
Was that Control Shift A or was that Command Shift A?
I think it's Command Shift Space. Oh no, it's Control Shift Space, I believe. Well, Command Shift A will give you Find Actions, and then you can just probably use it there.
That's right. Okay, I'm thinking of the wrong one.
All right. So we talked about like keyboard shortcuts, which is pretty cool. Phil, but what about your window configuration? Because I think early on you mentioned that you could have like a split pane, and you could have like all of your panels and stuff popped up. What's that setup like for you?
Yeah, sure. So usually when I'm working on a class, I like to have nothing but the class visible. So of course, it's fun to have a bunch of tool windows, but sometimes you just want to concentrate on the class at hand without any kind of distraction. So I really like to just get everything out of the way with some sort of, we can call it a mini full screen mode. So it's not like the full-fledged full screen mode, but it's just going to hide everything, every tool panel. So when you do Command Shift and F12 on the Mac, it just hides everything and focus really on the class itself, which is really super useful. But then when you're in this position, sometimes you still need to take a look at the project view or the structure, or go back to the version control. And this is where it's super useful to know the shortcuts to be able to go from different panels to different panels. So for example, if you take a look at your IDE right now, and you look at like project structure or Android monitor or version control, you see that there is a number to the left. So for example, a version control has a 9, the Android monitor has a 6, the project has a 1. Well, that's a mnemonic to be able to open them quickly. So for example, if you want to open version control, you can do command and 9 if you want to open the project panel, command and 1, and you can quickly go from one to the other, which is very useful when you want to navigate quickly. But once you're there, if you don't want to use your mouse and you want to go back to editing, when you're in any non-editor panel, you can just press escape and then you're back to editing.
Oh.
Or if you want something more interesting, even if you don't need a panel anymore, you can do shift escape and it's going to close the panel and then go back to your editor.
Very cool. Very cool.
I didn't, to tell you the truth, that is one shortcut that that I actually didn't even know off the top of my head. I've been wondering if it was there because I'm so used to using command 9 to open version control and command 6 to open Android monitor and back and forth and so forth. But I'll get stuck down in like Android monitor and then I'll just close it again and then it'll go back to my main editor window. But it's nice that you can hit escape and it goes back there. That's super cool. I had no idea. Cool.
So there are also like different kinds of modes now, right? And I think there's like the Zen mode, there's the presentation mode, there's a new distraction-free mode. Could you tell us a little about all of those kind of modes? Like since we're in the topic of window configurations?
Yeah, absolutely. So these modes are a bit curiosities, I would say. You don't use them all that often, but it's nice to see that they are there. So there is a presentation mode, which, as the name would imply, would probably use when you are doing a talk presentation in front of your colleagues just to show them how great Android Studio is. And it will just boost the font. So everything is going to look bigger. And that's about it. Pretty much. So focus on the code, bigger fonts, everything works fine. So instead of just going to your settings and changing everything, just toggle this from Command Shift A. And there's another one that's called distraction free mode. And when you are in full screen, it pretty much means that you only see the code itself. You don't see any toolbar at all. You don't even see like the little X to close your window. Mm-hmm. It's a dark background on your whole screen. You only see code.
Do you usually toggle between that mode? Is that what mode do you usually use?
Well, to be fair, I'm pretty much just using the defaults.
Gotcha.
All the time.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. You also mentioned about split window splits and splitting your panes. Do you use like the keyboard shortcuts there? Like what's the story there?
Every once in a while, it's very good to have two windows up at the same time. For example, working on a unit test and working on the real class, or for example, the XML file and the class file itself. So it's cool to be able to split between different panes. So you just Command Shift A, say like split windows horizontally or vertically, depending on your preference. Mm-hmm. And after that, a little known tip is that you can actually move from one pane to another using Alt Tab
yes.
on OS X at the very least.
Right. And this is very similar to how you would switch between tabs within, like if you were using Chrome and you wanted to like switch between between windows of the same Chrome application. And I didn't know this for a long time, but Android Studio and IntelliJ also has something very similar, right? So it would actually pop up just the list of tabs or like the list of like the options that you have within Android Studio. So it's almost like if you want to command tab between like inside of IntelliJ. Is that right?
So, yes, you mean Command E, just to be able to navigate through different files? Or there's another one that says Control Tab, yes, that will allow you to see every file and also every panel.
Oh, actually yeah, no, so, but thank you. Yeah, I was mentioning the Control Tab version, right? So that shows like all of the files in all of the tabs that you have.
Yes, very handy to be able to switch to different panels because not every panel has a mnemonic also.
Oh, I didn't, cool. Okay, I wasn't aware of that inside of this. That's called the switcher panel, and you could actually go directly to various different locations. That's cool.
The switcher, yeah, that's what it's called.
Now, as developers, one of the things we're always doing, I mean, thousands of times a day probably, is selecting different types of text. Do you have any tips? I know you do because I've seen them inside of your Android Studio tips. Can you share some of your tips that you have with text selection or just selection in general?
Do I have any tips?
Yes, absolutely. So one of the things that impress people the most usually is when they learn about the expand and shrink selection. So
yes.
What it does pretty much, it's a sort of a context-aware way to select. So instead of just dragging your mouse over a block of text, what you can do is do a Alt up and Alt down. And it will start selecting bigger scopes all the time. So for example, if you are inside of a word in camel case, it will start with like the camel part, like the middle of the word. After that, the variable itself. And then maybe like the whole definition. And after that, the whole if block. And after that, the whole method. And after that, the whole class. So it's a really fast way to be able to take a big chunk of code and copy it, move it around using the move lines up and down shortcuts and whatnot. So this thing is really super useful. That's probably like my second one in my productivity guide. Use it all the time.
This one was shown to me by Michael Bailey, who is back here on the Fragmented Podcast, back on episode 10. He showed this to me a couple of years ago, and it literally changed the way that I work with text editors. And now when I'm like, sometimes I'll be in Google Docs and I'll find myself pressing this to find selections and it's not there. And it drives me nuts. It's so useful. I wish every tool had it.
I find that even when I use RxJava a lot and I have like the action ones, action twos, and I want to select just that portion, like especially if you're not using something like Retro Lambda, then like for those like annoying anonymous inner classes, like the expand and shrink is like super useful.
So, Philippe, do you have any other ones that you possibly use at all? I know that there was one that that you had talked about before that always seemed kind of interesting to me. It was the local selection history. And that was back on, I think, November of 2014 where you talked about that. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and why you might want to use it?
Absolutely. So little known fact is that IntelliJ and Android Studio do keep a lightweight version control system internally. So even if you're not using Git or something else, there's still some sort of version control that is available. So what local selection history does is that you can select a block of code, for example, a method, right-click on it, and do local selection history or something like this. And what it does is provide you with a diff of everything that happened there for the past few times that you were there, like 9 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago. So you can actually see what changed, even if you did not commit anything to source control yet. So it's a great way to revert back to an older change or see what you did.
Now, back in the days of Sublime Text, which when I used to use Sublime Text, one thing, like you mentioned the expand and shrink selection as being like one of your most used things. One of the ones that I've found that I use a whole lot is basically if I want to select a similar sort of word. So if I have a variable name and I want to keep selecting the same thing across the file, I found that super useful. I think they call this multi-select. Could you like tell us a little more about this one?
Yes, absolutely. When IntelliJ introduced this, they actually put on a blog post saying it was like Sublime Text like multi-selection. So they're not hiding from it at all.
Okay.
It's pretty clear this is what they were doing. So what it is a way to be able to have multiple cursor on the screen at the same time and to be able to edit at multiple places at the same time. So one of the ways that you could be doing this is you can Alt Shift and click everywhere in your file, and you're going to see that it drops cursors everywhere you click. And then you can start typing, and it's going to type at all these places at the same time. Or you can start doing more interesting stuff, like, for example, selecting with like Shift, highlighting stuff, and then copying and pasting it somewhere else. And it will have a separate paste buffer for each of these cursors. So it opens up some interesting avenues for quick refactorings. One of the great ways to use it is that you can actually highlight a word, and then there is a shortcut to select the next occurrence of this word. Or you can also select all the occurrences of the same word in the same file. So it allows you pretty much to do some simple refactorings. Of course, it's a bit less safe than using a real rename refactoring because you're pretty much just editing text. There's no concept of what the code should look like, but it's still something that I use pretty much daily.
So selecting code is one bit, but if you wanted to like move, and this is probably where like you can get the most productivity gains, right? Like, and it's also like the way you can seem more impressive to people looking at your work. Like if you fly around, like, you know, like some of those Vim folks, like you see them flying around. So navigating code is another important sort of aspect, right? What are some of the tips you would have for our listeners in terms of like navigating code?
Yeah, so the one that you used most often is highlighting a symbol inside of a class. So for example, you do something like Command Shift plus F7, it's going to highlight everything in the class. For example, a field or a method name is going to highlight it everywhere. And then you can do Command G and just navigate through all the occurrences in the same class. So when you want to see where a variable is used inside of a class, that's actually a very good a shortcut. The other one that I use pretty much all the time is just quickly navigating to one method to another. So there is one shortcut, which is control and up or down, and it will put your cursor at the beginning of every major structure, I will say. So every method names or inner classes, something like that. This thing is really super useful. There is a file structure that's also very interesting when you want to see which methods are available in a class. So if you do command F12, it's going to show you in a pop-up the structure of the whole class. So all the method names will be there. And what's interesting also is that there is a find as you type in this pop-up. So when you know roughly the name of the method, you can just command F12, start typing it, press enter, and voila, you are at the correct place.
I like to think of this as like the X-ray vision for your class. So it sort of, it gives you like the major sort of portion, so you can quickly jump between each of these things, right? So like oh, if I want to like quickly jump between these sections, then it gives you a nice sort of basal structure for your whole class.
Absolutely. There is also another shortcut for that, which is just command 7, and that's a panel that's called structure, where you can always have a good view, an overview of your class, and you can sort of configure it like to sort of group properties as properties, even though there's no such concept right now.
Okay.
It's pretty interesting. I say otherwise, the biggest shortcut, the best that I use, is one called quick definition. So when you are inside of a class, you are looking at a method and you're wondering, well, what's the implementation of this method? Well, of course, you could drill down, open a new file and see what it looks like. But there's another shortcut, which is Alt Space, which is called Quick Definition, that will show a pop-up with the content of this method. So it's going to show the implementation right in place.
Oh, interesting. So this isn't necessarily just showing the Java docs. It's actually showing the implementation.
Exactly. It's the implementation. So of course, if your sources are not attached, this is not useful at all. Otherwise, you're going to throw like throw stub, new runtime exception, whatever. But okay, for everything else, works perfectly.
I did not know that. Oh, that's pretty cool. There's also this feature called bookmarks, right? Have you used it a lot? So there's if you're like going through like, or you're working in a feature and like you want to like quickly navigate, I've heard bookmarks can be useful. Do you use this at all?
Yes, I usually use it every once in a while. So it's very useful to be able to drop markers in some key places of your code, especially when you're coming into a new code base and you're trying to understand how stuff works and code's a bit spread out. What you do, you put bookmarks at the points of interest in your code and you navigate quickly between all of them with like control 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So you can drop markers and then just go quickly everywhere that you need to.
And I recently discovered there's also like a mnemonic variety where you can assign, like you can actually assign, once you have a couple of bookmarks, you can assign like a letter, say like an alphabet, say A or B or C or D. And then just opening up the bookmarks and hitting that C or D will take you to that place directly. So that's also, you just keep discovering new things every day as you use Android Studio, I suppose. What are some of the other ones? Like some of the standard ones, like go to declaration, go to implementation, like how do you use those ones? Because I've seen everyone recommend those, but could you tell us like how that would be useful?
While quick definition is very cool to be able to see what something looks like in line, sometimes you just want to really go to the method definition site, or you want to open a class. So command B is very great for that. It just drills down to wherever you are. So if you drill down inside a class name, it's going to take you to the class. If you drill down on method name, is going to go to the implementation of this method, which is very useful to navigate quickly. You don't have to try to divine where this thing should reside. Other one that is pretty useful is when you are on a class that has either children or parents, is go to parent or go to children or go to implementation. If you do command Alt and B on a class, it will tell you every classes that is implementing it or overriding it, and then you can start navigating. Or if you want also to have a little graph of the implementation hierarchy, you can do Control H on the class, and it will give you like all the implementers, if an interface, who's implementing it, and all that stuff.
Oh, that
I'll be 100% honest. I'm like doing this live right now to see what these things look like.
Oh yeah, me too. This is like, I have Android Studio up as well, and I'm just like trying, like as he says, I'm just like quickly like trying each of these things. It's super cool.
Like hierarchy, I'm like, oh.
The thing I like about this is that you can traverse both up or down, right? So you can go to the parent or you can go down, and that's like super useful because like once you're in the code and you want to try to understand how, like, you know, if there's like an interface, there's like an implementation. Like you said, this is super cool.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And one of the greatest shortcut also that I use all the time is there's one called Navigate to Last Edit Location.
Oh, yes.
And what it does basically is you just cycle back to every places where you edited the code. So let's say that you are writing a method and then you need to inspect some code elsewhere just to understand how your code base works. So you just drill down in like three files and you have three tabs opened, and just to get back to where you were, yep, command shift and backspace, and it sends you right to the last place you were editing, and you've pressed it again like the previous place, the one before that, and so on.
Useful
it is.
So we, as developers, we spend a lot of time, of course, navigating code, but I think one of the things that we also spend a lot of time is trying to figure out why our code isn't doing the things that we expect it to do, also known as debugging. So there's, of course, we add, most people here know how breakpoints work, but there's also other types of breakpoints like conditional breakpoints and temporary breakpoints and even something known as logging breakpoints. And a lot of these things most people have no idea about. Would you mind talking a little bit about like conditional breakpoints to start off with? And maybe we can dive into temporary and logging breakpoints too?
Yeah, conditional breakpoints are really interesting because what they pretty much allow you to do is to set up a bit of Java code that will return a Boolean that will tell IntelliJ or Studio if they should be breaking right now or not. One example of this would be, well, you are iterating through a loop. You have 300 things in that loop, and you know that like the 101 is causing a crash, for example. Mm-hmm. Well, you could say when I equals 100, do break. You don't want to just step into it 400 times. This is just time consuming. But you can go a bit crazier with it if you want. So you could call pretty much any method that is available on the class path right now to be able to break whenever you want. You could compare with different instances. It's great also when you couple it with another shortcut, another debugging tip, which is mark objects. So when you are debugging objects, you can actually, when you are inspecting the object, just press F3 on it or right click and say mark objects, and you can assign a label to this object. And after that, in the same debugging session, every time this thing will come up, it will have the label. So it's very good just to understand where it's getting used. One of the use cases would be, well, you thought this thing should be a singleton, and so you mark it first, but then when you're reusing it, it's a different instance. happened there?
Yeah.
Adding something to a list, is it still the same one, or was the list copied, for example? Very interesting. And once you have marked this object, you can actually refer to this object using something like if I remember correctly, debug label underscore the name you gave it. So when you are doing your conditional breakpoints, you could do something like instance this equal debug label and whatever name you gave it.
Beforehand. Whoa, I did not know that. That is amazing. I recently used this mark objects thing because we were debugging like another side application, and we were having some trouble with the event bus. Like the event bus instance wasn't getting injected, like the same instance wasn't getting injected, and that was causing some like business logic bugs, right? And so we used this mark object thing to like immediately tell us like how if it was like working the right
Definitely
way.
Definitely cool.
So I mean, breakpoints are cool, right? Everyone uses like the normal breakpoints. You talked about conditional breakpoints, but this is something that I had no clue until I saw Phil sort of mentioned this in our notes. There's also temporary breakpoints, and this would have been a lifesaver. I would have literally saved hours of my life if I knew this before, because typically what I do is I only want to go to a place once, but what I'll do is I'll put the breakpoint there, it'll come there, and then I'll remove the breakpoint. right? Because I was like, oh, I just want, like, this is not something I want permanently in there. Can you tell us how this works, like temporary breakpoints? Would this solve my problem of like just wanting to temporarily hit a certain point?
Absolutely. So the temporary breakpoints are exactly that. What you put them once, and once it's hit, it's going to be removed. So you break at this point and gets removed. And the way you have those is just by doing Alt Shift and clicking in the gutter where you would be putting breakpoints usually.
Oh,
Alt Shift and then clicking. I will remember that.
Absolutely. Or what you could also be doing, if you don't remember the shortcut, is if you go into the details of the breakpoint, there is a checkbox that is called Remove Once Hit. And this will do exactly the same thing. First time it's hit, I'm going to remove it.
Pretty cool. I'm just looking at it now.
Yeah, I noticed also if I do a... If you don't know the answer to this, it's totally fine too. If I do the Alt click and I get the breakpoint, it has like a number inside of it, and that shows me that it's going to then turn itself off, of course, after it's been hit. But if I Alt click that same one again, it turns green, and I've never noticed that. Do you know what that green breakpoint means?
Yeah, it means that it's disabled.
Oh,
actually, so you can Alt click your breakpoints and disable them for the next run. For example, if you have a bunch of breakpoints, you know you're gonna get back to those. You could actually disable them. It can be useful in some cases. Sometimes you're just better off removing them. But what you can do also is in the breakpoint list, you can also uncheck the breakpoints.
Right.
And that will do exactly the same thing. Or what you can also do is take a couple of breakpoints in your list and just group them as a folder. And you right click on them, say move to group, create a group, and then you can disable a whole group. So if you have a couple of different refactoring tasks, debugging tasks, you can just toggle breakpoint groups on and off.
Oh, sweet.
This is like just, it's crazy. It's like the most badass Swiss Army knife.
It's like my brain's like exploding, you know?
And there's also one you mentioned in actually your tips series called Logging Breakpoints. I mean, to be honest, I didn't quite understand what that was. Could you like tell us what that is?
Yeah, so Logging Breakpoints, you start your app in debug mode, you add a logging breakpoint, and this is a breakpoint that actually won't break. So it won't stop any thread. Code will execute as normally. Mm-hmm. But what it's going to do is log stuff into the debugging console. So it could be as simple as say, well, this line was hit.
Oh,
so you can see how many times this line is hit. Or what you could be doing is log a custom message or even execute some arbitrary code at that point. So, for example, if you want to know what is the value of one of your variable, let's say, in an animation, well, you cannot break during an animation because it doesn't make much sense usually. But what you could be doing is adding a log at that point. So, of course, you could just add a real log using the logcat. But every once in a while, like the build can take a while and you're already there, mm-hmm. or you're able to reproduce the bug right now and you don't want to redeploy. So you can just add your breakpoints at that point and just log the information that you need.
To enable that, and maybe I missed this, do I need to have it as enabled and as suspended, or do I need both of those options unchecked instead of the breakpoint options?
Well, you need it to enabled and you uncheck the suspend one. So it won't suspend the thread, so it will continue. So then you can log a message to the console, log an evaluated expression. You can do a lot of stuff there.
That's awesome.
I am going to go today and tell my colleagues of this, because I have, when we have pair programmed, like we have literally done this. We're like, we really should have like a logging statement here. So we log it and then we'll restart the app. And as we know, build times sometimes can be pretty long. This is gold.
Yeah, another interesting thing with breakpoints is that you can create dependencies between your breakpoints. So you can actually say to a breakpoint, well, stay disabled until I hit this other breakpoint. So, for example, like after you have a breakpoint where you're logged in, so you won't have anything before login, for example, or inside of a loop.
Some other debugging tricks that have been mentioned for example, there's one called Analyze Stack Trace. Can you tell us what that's about?
Yeah, every once in a while, you get a stack trace and you are not in Android Studio, or it was not from the Logcat itself. So maybe you are using the command line Logcat, you receive a bug report by email. But the thing is, you do have a text file and you have a stack trace in it. What you can do is you copy paste it, you go to analyze stack trace in Android Studio, so like Command Shift A, analyze stack trace, and what it's going to do is pretty much just putting in another window and highlight the line number in the class. So when it says, well, there was an error at line 90 of your file.java, well, this thing will be clickable and then it will get you directly to the line 90 of your file.java.
This is like, I literally needed this yesterday. If I have, I'm using a tool like Fabric Crashlytics or something like that, it provides me with that stack trace that I can download in that text file. I could then take that, and what you're saying is take that, dump it into analyze stack trace, and then I can then navigate through that stack trace as I normally would if I was connected to Android Monitor.
Exactly. As long as the stack trace is not ProGuarded, at which point you still need to unscramble it.
Okay. And I guess you would probably need to make sure that you're on the same version of the stack trace. So for example, I store my Git hash in my Crashlytics, you know, keys, so I know that this crash is related to this, you know, commit or whatever. Because if I was, you know, I had changed a file 30 times before that, it wouldn't really make sense anymore. Correct?
Absolutely.
The other, like you, Don, like you mentioned, Crashlytics is one useful case for this. The other case where I found it useful is like when we have other developers who also have like are trying something on an emulator. You know, when they're trying to like make a backend endpoint work, and then, you know, they come back to like some of the Android developers and say, hey, I'm getting this crash. Like, could you let us know what's up with this? And I found that just like when they paste the stack trace and I paste it and use this like functionality in Android Studio, it makes it just so much more easier because like, boom, you know exactly like what's not working well. Before we move on from like the whole debugging topic, are there any other tips?
Yeah, one that I learned very late actually is that when you are in a debugging session, you can inspect the content of any variables just by alt-clicking on them. So what I was used to do is do something like alt and F8 just to see the evaluate expression dialog, which is very good, by the way. You can just type anything, it's going to execute in real time, so you can inspect your code and whatnot. But what you can do is I'll click on a variable when you are debugging, and it's going to show you a little pop-up with the actual content of the variable.
Oh, alt click. Let me. Oh man, this is pretty useful. Okay.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that, well, now I think of it, one of the shortcuts that does not exist in Android Studio, but definitely should, would be one to attach the debugger.
Oh yeah.
So we all know that we can start the app in debug mode, but yeah, we need to restart it, and it's always a bit slower. It's gotten a lot better, but back in the days, it was a lot slower to start in debug. So what you can actually do is go to your key maps and add a shortcut to attach a debugger. So I use it many times a day, usually. Just go to where I need to be, set my breakpoints, then attach a debugger.
Oh, yeah. I remember Don mentioning this in one of our previous episodes, and after he mentioned that, I've since always been using it.
Yeah, it's great. It's one of the ones that I'm the same thing. I feel the same way that Philip does. It should be there right out of the gate, but once you have it set up to a key combo that you have memorized, it's fantastic. So there's a ton of stuff in here, and I know we could probably go on for hours and hours, but there's also something else that I'd like to discuss, which is some of the cool new tricks that are inside of Android Studio that other folks may not know about, such as the ability to analyze your APK. Can you tell us a little bit about some of this functionality and why it might be useful?
Yeah, so the new APK analyzer that was announced at I/O this year was a way to take any APK, so not your code base itself, but really take an external APK or an APK of your own app, of course, and just take a look at what ended up in it.
Okay.
And more than that, where did it end up? So some of us, or a couple of us, have encountered the dreaded 65K method limits, where you cannot have more than 65K method references. And one way that you can solve this thing is that by using multi-dexing. So when the app is getting packaged, it's getting compiled, you know, some methods, some classes will end up in different dex files. So when you use the APK analyzer, you can actually see in which of these dex files each classes or method ended up. Another interesting thing is that you can see all the resources that ended up in your final APK. And this is after everything got merged. So if you have multiple modules, different libraries, and whatnot, different dependencies, you can actually see everything that got into your app. And sometimes you could be surprised at what an external dependency can bring to your app. And that means you can see what's the current size of your app, where you're spending the most size, where you are spending your methods, and all these cool things. So I'd say try it. Do like Command Shift A, analyze APK, and just pop your APK in that thing and see what it says.
Can I pop any APK into this? Like I could take like an external app and just like pop that in as well?
Yep, absolutely.
So I could take the Instacart APK and I could take a look at that. I'm just kidding.
Oh boy.
So there's also a couple other things in there that's pretty cool, like the layout inspector. Have you worked a lot with that at all?
I started working with it actually a week ago or something like that. And it's a game changer. It's super useful when you are entering a new code base, or even if it's your own code base, but it's getting pretty large. And it's doing pretty much the same thing as Stedo was doing. So it's a library that was announced by Facebook a while back. And what it does is allow you to inspect the current application that is running, the current layout that is displayed. So what you get is pretty much the same thing as the Chrome developer tool. So you can just hover over your interface and, for example, click on a button, and it's just going to tell you exactly where it stands in the view hierarchy and also provide you with all its properties. So usually the most useful one is is it invisible or visible? And most of all, what is its ID? So you can just click on something in your interface, you see what its ID is, and then you just search for that ID in your code, and you are back to where you should be editing. So it's really good for discovery.
So now I actually have to have my application installed, maybe a connected emulator or a connected device with the layout shown on the screen. And then in Android Studio, how would I get to that layout inspector?
Yeah, so the way you get to it is... I do it with Command Shift A layout inspector, but I think you can go into tools, Android, and then there is the layout inspector.
There we go. Back to Command Shift A, folks. That's what you need to use. Ignore the no using your mouse. No mouse allowed.
Yeah. No mousing around.
There's one thing you learned today is Command Shift A or Control Shift A if you're on Windows on Linux.
There you go.
Oh, but that's a good point that you brought up, Don, because like you need to have it running. You need to be connected to a device with your app open in order to use layout inspector.
And so would you say that this is very similar to like the hierarchy viewer?
It is. There are similarities in a way that you can see the hierarchy and some values, but I think it's a lot more powerful for our day-to-day development. So hierarchy viewer is really great when you're trying to debug, overdraw, and all that kind of things. But the layout inspector is very good when you are inspecting a code base and just trying to see, all right, I have this button here. Where is it actually in my layout files?
Okay, folks, so at this point, we've covered the intermediate basics that most Android developers should know on using Android Studio. But as you can see with the debugging session, we're slowly entering ninja mode here. So you're probably also coming to the end of your daily commute. So Don and I decided to break this episode into two parts. This concludes part one. But don't worry, Felipe returns in our next fragment with part two, and he goes full on ninja on us, and he actually shares some really cool configuration settings and other tinkering tips. And as we sign off, we also want to take this opportunity to thank our lovely sponsor, Hired. If you're looking for a new job, you know, a change in pace, then look no further than Hired.com. They're nice to hook you up with a cushy $2,000 bonus if you use our special link. That's Hired.com/fragmented, and it's 2 times the regular bonus. So once again, thank you so much for sponsoring the show, Hired. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we will catch you in our next fragment very, very shortly.